This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
My company is, he is every Tuesday and Friday on the program. He's the host of VSiN's College Football and Basketball Betting Podcast, the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show, airing on the weekends, 9 a.m. Central Time. Check your local listings. You can also hear him on VSiN Primetime. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Download the VSiN Watch app. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, man? How we doing?
I think y'all are back on Sirius, too.
Channel 158.
Yes, because I was on the road this weekend, I was scrolling up and down. I was like, ooh, VSiN's back.
We are. We've been back for a little bit. Yeah, channel 158. Oh, did you hear that? Jason Tatum just missed another
thing. Oh, no. He took another and fired. Boston.
Blank.
I did get a great text message from my dad. My dad played JUCO basketball, and I guess he was out of the baseball field or something.
So is he still eligible? Because JUCO does not hurt the eligibility.
That's a great question. I think he'd still have two to play two, although okay. I think it's just he would for sure have one to play one. I'm not sure he's got the explosive first step that he once did, but I guess he was driving back, and he texted me, did I hear that right? Boston shot 63s, and they missed 45. I go, you did hear correctly. And he's like, wow. And this is a man, keep in mind, before there was a three-point shot, the man was firing up from 30. Like, so this isn't like a shot that offends him. It was just, wow, that was something to behold. There's a few things from the games last night. I think I reached a breaking point last night, Tim, and it actually wasn't the Boston game. The Boston game of the two offended me the least, and I want to discuss that with you here in just a moment. Also, we got more games tonight to get into. Going to get into the list. Clemson as well as Notre Dame have agreed to a 12-game series. I guess Notre Dame's just in the Clemson business, rigging it for Clemson to make sure they get a little extra cash.
That's we'll discuss. I think it also has the likelihood of it smells like the end of Notre Dame USC is coming.
I think it also might be able to smell the end of the ACC.
Well,
I think you can smell that for a while, but I know it's, I know it's up for debate. But I'm just very curious. Of man, that's a sure is a long deal.
Yeah. Also, probably, I don't know. There's a whole lot we can dive into with that series being set up. But I do know that, you know, Notre Dame is going to more than likely play Florida State more.
And Miami.
More. And right, wasn't the deal that came out, you know, a couple months back, there was some maneuvering on who had higher television ratings.
Yeah,
right?
So they're going to distribute money based on, not entirely, but there is going to be a component of how many eyeballs do you bring to the league. That's the Florida State Clemson compromise, because, you know, Florida State's been claiming, you know, time slot champions. Look at how many people watch this. Like, that's.
And when you play, love them or hate them, when you play Notre Dame, you're going to bring lots of eyeballs.
Oh, I actually fault Notre Dame zero in this.
I think you have been pretty fair in understanding of this whole thing. You know, as a Notre Dame fan, I get strays all the time, and I understand it. But I'm like,
online, really?
Why would they ever join a conference? Like,
they will not join a conference until they have to.
Right. And it's like, this deal is another, you know, piece in the arsenal for them. That's like, why would we ever join a conference? Like, we just agreed to a 12-year deal with your best program, and we could do whatever we want. And I was texting with a buddy who covers Notre Dame, and I said, is this the end of Notre Dame USC? And he said, maybe preemptively, but he's like, it also just means they're probably going to play Duke or Virginia less.
Yeah, which is I think that's okay. That's a huge part. Now, Ross Dellinger had a caveat with it, so we can discuss that. We get into the list. Also, NBC, speaking of the Notre Dame Sports Network, they've got to be thrilled with some outstanding horse racing news that they just got today. So we'll discuss that during hour number two. We'll talk about the games that we like. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But as promised, Tim, I think there's a couple of big picture issues that I actually think take away from the enjoyment of sports. It's largely from the same two groups of people. I think we have far too many people that cover sports that have either A, never been in a locker room, or B, act like they've never been in a locker room, and they've made it a moral issue that, again, I'm not saying that life should be like a locker room. I'm not saying that. I just also understand what a locker room's like. There's a lot of pearl clutching, and it makes everything a lot more insufferable for all of us. I'm setting that aside. I think last night was the breaking point for me in the analytics/optimization era of sports. And there's two key examples, one of which I mentioned offended me, one of which didn't. Let's start with that Boston game. We'll take it in chronological order. As mentioned, 45 missed threes. They chunked 60 threes, and they hit 15. They kept chunking. Tatum kept firing. Even, I think my favorite play of the night, though, was when Tatum gave it. There was a play with, like, maybe, I don't know, 90 seconds left in overtime, and Tatum gave it up to Horford. You could tell he's like, I'm not missing again. And then Horford just gave it right back to him. And then he, like, begrudging, was like, oh, God, now what do I have to do? And then he fired it up. It actually was a shot that from the TV hard cam, the sideline cam, you're like, that was an absolute brick. But then when they did show the behind the goal, you realize, like, oh, no, it's just a long shot, and he fired it 8 million miles in the air, and it hit the back rim, and so it looked like a lot worse of a miss than it was. But overall, I'm actually okay with what Boston did, and here's why. Boston's approach is their philosophy. That is how they play. They do not deviate from it. It's, to me, it's the exact same as the way Alabama plays basketball. They're probably going to chunk up, maybe not 60, but they're going to fire up a significantly greater amount of threes than whoever else they're going to see the rest of the way. Like, if you've seen, is it Kurt Goldsberry that does the graph that we'll see on Twitter, where it's like percentage of threes taken, they're basically like in a different quadrant than even the number two team. Like, that's how far in front they are in terms of everyone else. That's their style of play. So be it. They're going to win by the three. They're going to die by the three.
Well, and I would say this to jump in. It's like when Nico Harrison came out and said, you know, defense wins championships. Maybe not an apples to apples comparison, but I bring that up because I'm like, dude, you made the finals last year with Luka. And I'm not saying that he was perfect, obviously, as we saw, but I say that to say this. The Celtics won the title last year. They won 61 regular season games.
By the way, they won the title. I believe, George, correct me if I'm wrong, they went 16-2 in the playoffs.
The Celtics last year?
Celtics. Four. Six,
no, was it 4 or 3? No game went more than 5 series. They swept, so they went 5-5. So I think they went 16-3.
Yeah, because they lost. All right, so last year.
Lost to
year,
Miami when Miami hit like 25 threes.
Yep. They lost to Cleveland once. They swept the Pacers.
Yep.
Yeah, so 16-3. So we met it in
yes.
the middle. Look, watching that game, and as someone who bet the Celtics minus 2.5 games in the series, I kind of
didn't you also have a win the first?
No, that was with Cavaliers. Yeah, okay. it was not a...
Okay, so we already lost that one. That was thrown that one in the trash. Moving on.
The Derby was good. Everything else pretty much was crap for me from a betting standpoint over the past couple of days. I was laughing at the Jason Tatum. My favorite was, you're up one, 98-97, pulls a three, misses. Jrue Holiday gets a rebound, kicks it back to Jason Tatum, pulls another three, misses. And then the Knicks come down and take the lead. So, yeah, as shocking as that result was, because I really didn't think the Knicks stood a chance in this series, and when they were down 20 middle of the third quarter, I was like, all right, I feel pretty good about where we sit in this series. You know, Porzingis probably comes back, right, dealing with whatever he's sick or whatever it was.
They said illness, and like that is the one thing I'll throw in context. Like, when he left the game, that was also a problem. Like, I don't know if those two things are related. It could also just be, hey, when they got up that flurry of 20, guess what? They were starting to hit some threes in that. And that's where the Alabama basketball comps come in. If Alabama hits their threes, it does feel like it's just an avalanche and it's a barrage. And I give the Knicks credit for, hey, they could have folded and they didn't. And they kept playing and they kept battling, and they kept saying, like, you know what? They're gonna keep missing if we keep defending like this. But overall, I was fine with what Boston did.
I still, of the three that we'll discuss, I still contend I would be shocked if the Celtics don't win this series. Like, that's why it's a best of seven. And the Knicks have to do that three more times, where the game went to overtime. The Knicks shot 46% from three. Granted, they also were terrible from the line, so it is worth noting that. And the Celtics were 25% from long range. So,
no, I agree with you. Like, because it does feel like the Garland injury is looming over the Cavs. And
not only Garland, it's DeAndre Hunter.
Sure.
It's
health looms over that series.
Yeah. Going in, and I, you know, we mentioned my bet for the Cavaliers. That was a game where, like, last night, and I'm not trying to take away from the Knicks, but maybe I am, I felt like that was pretty fluky. What I watched on Sunday afternoon didn't seem fluky, even though the Pacers shot out of their minds, right? They were,
but they also, to your point, they got a ton of open looks. It wasn't right. It wasn't like they're hitting one-legged fadeaway threes with four hands in their face. It was like, man, they were just running their offense. It felt like they were just playing in the gym.
And also, so we had I had a buddy of mine on my show last night who does afternoon drive in Cleveland, and he said, you know. First off, he said he's not concerned. He felt like the Cavs are still going to win the series. But he also added the fact that he felt like Donovan Mitchell's not 100%. And it's like, man, if you're talking about Mobley, Hunter, Garland didn't play in game one, and if Donovan Mitchell's not 100%, yikes. Like, I think they win tonight, but I think this is going to be more of a war than I anticipated.
Well, I think the other aspect of it is, as we've seen, whether it be the NCAA tournament, whether it be the NBA playoffs, oftentimes, like, we can relate to it here in Memphis because the Pacers are kind of similar to the Grizzlies in the sense of, if you have a team that is just not going to be physical and bully them, and it's going to allow them to play at the pace that they like, they have a shot in that because they can be comfortable. And the Pacers are able to largely be comfortable. Now, the Cavs are a better team, but when you consider the injuries and whatnot, I'm with you. The other two, with last night with Jokic, like there is an element of, okay, the best player, I know the guy that's going to win the MVP is on the other team, but the best player in the world is on Denver. And if you tell me that he is great in four games and they get four wins, I'm not like stunned. Do I expect it? No, I still think Oklahoma City is the best team. And then with last night, I'm with you. Like, fluky's not necessarily the right word, but it feels like this is the downside of when you play the way that Boston does, which is going to largely be dependent on the three. If you have a night where you shoot it very poorly and exceptionally poorly, historically poorly, yes, you are vulnerable. But we saw the same thing last year. Remember when we were talking after game two when Miami hits all the threes against the Celtics and mm-hmm. the Celtics are like wondering, like, do we have the Miami heebie-jeebies? Like, and you and I were like, I'm going to take the Celtics the rest of the way. And that was the right approach. But I think what actually offended me the most.
Michael Porter Jr.'s play?
He's honestly, like, with all due respect to the young kids that are fighting for their lives, like, it feels like he's a Make-A-Wish, like, patient. Like, every time he hits a shot, they're like, yeah, Michael! Go, Michael! Like, yeah, you're doing it! Like, it's honestly, it's so sad. This guy's making, what, $200 million?
Yeah, his contract, I think, is... He's got a max, right? Yeah,
I can't
five years.
I can't remember
five
if it's an actual max or if it's one of those ones that got announced like a max, but really it's tied. I don't know if this is tied to the salary cap. But he's like, it legitimately is like when he makes a shot, everyone just like claps for him. And it's just kind of like.
He's going to make $40.8 million in 2 years.
Yeah. But actually, what offended me in that game, because Mark Dagno has forgotten more basketball than I've ever known. I do not question that. But you know what else I can recognize? You know what my analytics say? You're better off playing the final possession on defense without Nikola Jokic on the floor. And this was a move that they get away with it because Jokic isn't the guy that actually makes the shot. But they get away with it because Edelman truly screwed up. He takes Jokic off the floor with whatever, 13 seconds left. And their plan is, we're fouling. We're just going to make sure he doesn't get his sixth foul if they go and attack him. Well, you know what else can happen? Exactly what happened. Oklahoma City gets a wide open dunk, and you don't have any timeouts. And Jokic is standing on the sidelines, going up and down, losing his mind, because he thinks what's going to happen is they're not going to get the ball back with him on the floor. I understand fouling up three is like small ball in baseball. You can't do it situationally. You have to do it again and again and again. It has to be a philosophy, and that is how the numbers work out, and that's how the system works. With that being said, holy hell, I'm out on analytics because I am so sick of everyone acting like every play in basketball is a hand of blackjack. It's not. There are other variables. Nikola Jokic could either be on the floor or off the floor. That changes the math. You are telling me that the best chance is to foul when you're up three, or your best chance is to play out a possession without Nikola Jokic on the floor. And by the way, what do all the numbers say? What were we talking about the whole game? You've got to just survive the minutes without Jokic. You got to survive the minutes without Jokic. What is the easier possession? Jokic on the floor or Jokic off the floor? Like, I am just so sick of trying to optimize everything in sports and just turning it into a math equation. Sports are not played by robots. Guess what can happen? Other teams can make mistakes. You can make mistakes. Everything is not literally an independent event and a coin flip. Sometimes it's played by players that are more talented. Sometimes it's played by players that are smarter. I am so sick of everyone just falling on this crutch of, well, what do you want me to do? The analytics say I got a foul there. Got a foul. Well, what do you want to do? My hands are tied. It's part of, like, we've talked about this in football. Like, I'm convinced the going for it thing is largely just because every single time we watch a game on TV, the ESPN analytics, I'm still waiting for the time when it says punt or kick. It always says go, go, go. And now all these coaches have been backed into this corner where it's like, what do you want me to do? I had to go for it. Number said go for it. Gotta go. Gotta go. Gotta go.
I think you nailed it. I don't really have much of a pushback. Worst case scenario, you're going to overtime, right?
I guess you could technically with say, Jokic. What if you fouled on the three?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what was interesting, not to veer off of that take, but what was interesting about the Celtics, the end of the Celtics game where Mikal Bridges just mans up Jalen Brown,
I mean,
says, give me that
truly
ball.
Truly bullied him.
Like, give me that ball.
He ripped the ball away without the whistle ever being blown.
Because the interesting thing is I'm watching it unfold. I'm like, okay, in the NBA, if you do a dead ball foul, that's a free throw
and
the ball back.
Yes.
So it was kind of a tricky situation for the Knicks in the sense that you couldn't really foul there because you're going to have to go up quickly. Like, Jalen Brown, I thought they were going to give him three free throws when he put up the heave.
So
he was
I
fouled.
Thought
we did, he, no, he kind of full disclosure. I was watching on air, so we didn't have the
yeah,
sound
he
on.
Kind
so I didn't
of,
know what the discussion was.
He kind of doubled. No, the discussion was: did he foul him in the act of shooting?
Because it was pretty quick.
But
like,
if you
he
watched,
got that thing up,
he kind of double clutched. I think if he would have just gone straight, because it was almost like he realized, oh, they fouled me too soon, and he kind of thought about it, and then he ends up firing it late. Because once they actually slowed it down and you saw the replay, you're like, okay, Cat clearly fouls him before he's going up in the motion. But I think if he would have just gone straight up, I think he gets it. But like, that's the other aspect of it for me. If you want to talk about the actual mistake that I thought Mazzulla made, the Knicks tipped their hand. They fouled way too early the previous dead ball. And they let you know, we're going to foul up three. And we don't care if there's 9 seconds left. We're fouling. And at that point, what always drives me insane is, why do guys catch the ball and just wait for the foul? Like, if the idea is you're down three.
Oh, that final possession by the Celtics was a joke. Like, Jason Tatum, once again, all NBA player. We talked about him last week. We felt like he's underrated, right? He's a champ. He's all NBA, etc. But he clearly was just out of it last night, late in that game. And he's just standing on top of the... Like, I've always been a big proponent of get to the bucket and get an easy bucket. And for now, it works more in college because the free throws aren't as automatic in college. But there was like 15 seconds left, right? 108-105.
Yep.
Get to the bucket, make it 108-107, and then foul and see what happens. Or try to get a steal. You're a really good defensive
honestly,
team.
Part of the whole... The idea was in the Denver game, I know I'm flipping games on you, but Denver said, okay, cool, you're going to keep fouling us. We're going to just keep playing this out. And then they eventually got to where they didn't get to foul SGA. They got to foul Holmgren. And Holmgren missed two.
75% free throw shooter and misses both free throws. And look, Aaron Gordon, you know, you've got Russ and Aaron Gordon running the break. More often than not, you're feeling pretty good that they're going to miss a shot. But
well, no, I said it on Twitter. You can relate, but like anytime you're at high school basketball or below and you can hear what the coaches are yelling in the gym, that was the single biggest example. Like, I could just see my dad screaming, no, 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 way to hit. And you could just say, it was just like, way to hit. It's because there was still... I still felt like he could get to the rim. Like, it wasn't the clearest of passes. Like, he did say, hey, an open shot's a good shot. It's like, okay, fine. He buries it. But, like, I was stunned that when he pulled up, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to do this.
Yeah. Think about the playoffs Aaron Gordon has had, man. He's got the putback dunk at the buzzer from the Jokic, you know, air quotes, pass. And then he hits this shot. Yeah, he's had some big moments, man. And look, I am as big of a Russ, I don't want to say hater. I just know what he is. And you will let Russ shoot.
Yeah, that
his
you
thing.
Bring up a good point. If you're just a Russ realist, you're all of a sudden labeled as a hater.
It's just, look, I said this, God, it felt like 10 years ago when he kind of pulled a Carlton with Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City, right? He was like, I'm going to take the big shots. And it's like, maybe we let, you know, arguably the best player in the world at the time take care of business there.
Someone that legitimately has a claim to being the most skilled offensive player in the history of the game.
Right. But he just was, you know, Carlton from Fresh Prince stealing the ball from Will Smith's hands and throwing up the air ball.
I got it.
But what I've always said about Russ is you can't deny the competitiveness.
No, agreed.
And when he was in OKC by himself, was there some stat padding? Yes, of course. Should he won one MVP? Probably not. But regardless, he got that team to the postseason. The same thing about a bad Wizards team in 21. He got them to the postseason. So when he's on a team that is not a championship contender, he's great. And I knew immediately, and I'm sure you did as well, that when the Lakers trade went down, I still remember being on air that night on VSiN, be like, this is a disaster. Like,
well,
this
just,
is not going to work.
It was the ultimate, it's like one of the legitimate criticisms I think you can have of LeBron James is LeBron James is a star chaser. He chases the name. He chases the brand. It's never the guy that's the best fit for him. Like, Cleveland at the end kind of figured out, you know what the best case scenario is, surround LeBron with some shooting and then have guys that will commit to playing defense. He will orchestrate. He will be the entire offense. But you've got guys are going to get open looks. They've got to knock it down. It's like, well, that's the opposite of what Russ is.
Right. And it's like the first year when they won the title in the bubble, I was like, this team actually makes a lot of sense, right? It was.
Yeah. Well, it was, and that's the other thing.
It was Danny Green. It was I still remember I took a screenshot. I forget it was game five, the Jimmy Butler game.
Yeah.
And Danny Green had a look where like no one was within like 20 feet of him and he just clanked it. But yeah, they had.
But Caruso was a great fit for them.
Caruso was great. The other guy, God, who am I? I'm forgetting now.
Well, that was kind of like the
who's in Orlando now. Really good shooter. That I'm
KCP.
KCP. Wait,
there's a good shooter in Orlando.
Yeah.
Just the one.
Okay.
But KCP had a career year. But yeah, when Russ went there, I'm like, this is.
Is that
really
the year he was coming off of prison?
Well, and the funny thing was too, like
I think it was too. It's like it really was like a great like Disney movie, like. Gets out of jail, comes and wins an NBA title.
Well, they were thinking about getting Buddy Hield a couple years ago from Indiana, and I'm like, that makes sense.
He's a shooter.
But yeah, so to Russ's credit, and I don't know if you heard the quote, was it after game seven? I think it was, where he was basically like, I'm going to miss some shots. I'm going to turn the ball over, but I'm going to get some steals. And I was like, at least you know what you are.
And I mean, I'll give him credit, man. He got some tough rebounds.
Dude. Look, I
know he claimed.
I don't want to say I'm eating full crow, but like he's playing really well. And this postseason, he's been impressive, man. I mean, he's had some games. I mean, look, 1 of 5 from three last night, but still, you know, he gets the big, you know, breakout. It hits Aaron Gordon, and they hit the three, man. So we'll see.
Okay, so we kind of discussed it because you and I were both. I think I'm stronger on. I think Oklahoma City's still going to win.
If you ask me I don't know what to expect from the two teams tonight. You know, Golden State. I'm kicking myself.
Oh, I can tell you what I expect, and I can't wait to be painfully wrong because I can already see the market's going to go against me. I don't believe that all four underdogs are winning game one.
Oh, I don't either. When Indiana beat Cleveland, as much as I was annoyed with my personal bet, I was like, okay, I could kind of see it. The fact that Denver, also you just add into the situational spot last night was as terrible.
Short rest, travel
versus a team with full week rest. You're down 10 at halftime. Like when they were down 10 at half, I'm like, okay, they're going to pack it in. Like, this thing could get ugly here. Like, they gave a decent run at it in the first quarter, and then they're down 10 at the break. Okay, adios. But you just got to give them credit, man. Like, they just kept fighting and fighting and fighting.
Well, honestly, what changed it for me was I felt like we've seen when Oklahoma City, when that crowd starts to get into it and they start to kind of make a run, they have this tendency to have these like just avalanches. And they got up like 12 maybe in the third. And I believe at the end of the third, it was cut down to 4. That was when I started to think, maybe this is a little different. Because it felt like they were pushing. And then I think the other key thing is they just didn't shoot the ball great. Like, they didn't shoot it horrifically, but they did not shoot the ball great. Denver didn't either. And that, to me, just came down to which coach handled the situation better. Neither exactly, like, handled it great. Like, I'm not giving Edelman an A for how they handled it, but they just handled it less poorly.
Well, to have Jokic off the floor, as you eloquently put, is not a great look.
It's one of those ones where it's like,
I understand the
process. We understand the thought process, but
you can't have him foul out there.
Right, but it's like, are you really going to do this?
Or you could also be like, hey, Jokic, don't foul him. Get someone else over there to
foul. Let him go. And also, just trust him.
How would you rank? I think it's pretty simple. Is it as simple as level of concern of the teams that lost? Cleveland, OKC, Boston. Would that be your three?
Yes.
From most to least?
Cleveland for health reasons, as laid out. OKC because I know the MVP is on OKC, but it's so obvious to me the best player in the world is still Nikola Jokic.
The dude had 42, 22, and 6.
And like I get it. Serious? I know people throw out, well, SGA had 30. Like 31, 10,
is awesome.
31, 10, and 8. But like the other thing to me is, and I'm not blaming SGA because I think he made the right basketball plays, but it's a lot easier to take the ball out of SGA's hand than it is to take it out of Jokic's hand.
It does, and I'm not trying to overreact because I'm with you. I think they still win this series, and I think they ultimately win the West. But it does feel a little bit like, and I know the Thunder lost to, they lose in the Western Conference Finals last year?
The semis.
They lost to Dallas in the semis. Dallas
beat them in game 6 when P.J. Washington hit that big shot.
So
it would have been a forced game 7 back in OKC and, you know, who knows.
History, more often than not, tells us that you got to take your lumps. And you could argue that OKC took their lumps last year. And I would listen to it, but it does feel, I'm trying to think of a fair comparison, because like,
if you go, have you looked at the box sheet from the NBA? If you look at that, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I guess you could say the free throw disparity, the makes of, like, Denver was way better at the line. But, like, when you look at it, all the things that Oklahoma City needs to win, like, they got. Like, it wasn't as if Denver just shot the ball incredibly. I think they both made 42 shots. There is a definite free throw disparity, but it's like the Nuggets turned it over 18 times, gave up, like, 24 points. Like, when you look at it, you're like, how did they lose this game?
Well, and I think that's where I guess I'm a little concerned for OKC, because, like, if Boston, you could just look at, all right, Knicks shot 47% from three, and the Celtics missed 45 three-pointers. Like, it's pretty simple to say shooting regression from a positive regression should be coming for the Celtics, a team that, as we alluded to, has been here before, won a title a year ago, and, okay, they got punched in the mouth a little bit. Maybe they assumed that they had it in the bag. I don't know. I just still look at the rosters, and I say I'm pretty confident that the Celtics take care of business. But when you look at this series, and, I mean, hell, you could even argue, looking back to last year when OKC got knocked out by, did Dallas have the better player last year? I think they did, right?
No, I mean, to me, like, that is the similarities of these two series, where Jokic has replaced Luka. I still think, though, Oklahoma City's significantly better than they were last year.
I agree. And I still think they win this series, but that was eye-opening to see. When you think about the disadvantage for Denver and the fact that they were down double digits on the road in one of the most hostile environments in the league, and they still lost that game. And it's not like, you know, you could say, well, Jokic had 44, 22, and 6. The dude does that like every game. So it's not like it was some outlier performance.
If you're asking me to say the outlier, how many times do I think Russ is going to get 18 on 7 of 13?
But it's not like he, you know, when I think back to the Clippers series and they stole game one of that series, the Nuggets did, you had Russ hitting threes. And I'm like, well, that's not sustainable. He went 1 of 5 from 3 last night.
No, I mean, I guess then the flip side of it is do you really think, like for me is like, okay, is Jalen Williams going to go 2 of 9?
Sure.
SGA went 2 of 6. I mean, that's a little, but like SGA is not a, like, he's not a 3-point guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's been decently efficient, but like, you know, that's 33%. I think he shoots around 38% from three.
So let me ask you this. Right now, and I have DraftKings pulled up, Cavaliers to Celtics to Thunder, all on the money line, is minus 115 right now. Do all three of these teams win game two? The zigzag, by the way, just from a covering standpoint, for those unaware, zigzag, whoever loses a game, the following game has won and covered like 67% of the time this postseason. And I'm just talking about winning. The concern with me would obviously be tonight with Cleveland.
I was about to say, is that...
We don't know. Like, they don't even... at shoot-around this morning, Mobley, Garland, and Hunter were not at shoot-around this morning.
It's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to just be dismissive of Cleveland. I think they're really good. But I also don't want to sit there and act like, man, if you're missing three of your top five guys, like, that's a big deal. Or that they're banged up, that's a big deal. It does feel to me like, though, if one team thinks like, hey, we got the split, let's go home, it feels more like that for Indiana than it does even for Denver, because like I can see with Denver, they know, guys, we're not that deep. Like we can't take any games for granted. We have to go all out. And so that's the toss up for me, because I think the other one I feel pretty confident about.
Celtics might win by 20.
Yeah.
Like, I might play some alt spreads tomorrow. And that was the interesting thing. When you saw, we were on air last night, line opened at 8.5.
Yeah.
And then it went to 9, 9.5, and it's now 10.5. Like, the Celtics, of the three, once again, back to my confidence level, of the three, I could see them coming out and just pulverizing the Knicks. And if you're the Knicks, let's be honest, man. I mean, they had the second greatest Knick in the stands, Patrick Ewing, watching last night. They have to be happy stealing one in TD Garden.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about that Clemson-Notre Dame series that was announced today and the implications. We'll talk that and some college football when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching. Phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. Zen Sports is launching their brand new VIP Play Live app later this month, and that means that you'll be able to bet on over 200 leagues, and you can even parlay all your favorite bet types. You've always heard live now, but you've not experienced live always on VIP Play, so stay tuned for more on that. Of course, they'll have the VIP Players Club sweepstakes continuing, meaning that every bet you make on VIP Play gets you entries into the monthly contest. You'll earn one entry per bet, one entry per dollar bet, as well as 10 times your entries on parlays and same game parlays. Bet assured in Tennessee with the VIP guarantee. With VIP Play, everyone plays like a VIP. That means 24/7 customer support from real people. You can earn entries into the Players Club sweepstakes with every bet and being able to cash out on a bet for the full stake if the line hasn't changed, and much, much more. So get ready to claim your VIP Play welcome bonus when you make your first bet of $5 or more, and you'll get $100 in bonus bets instantly. All you'll have to do is use the code JEFFTN. VIP Play app is coming soon to Tennessee. Stay tuned for more. You can also get more information at VIPPlayApp.com. As always, gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and located in Tennessee to bet. All right, Tim, your favorite college football team, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, have struck a deal with the Clemson Tigers. I am reading from Ross Dellinger earlier this morning. Notre Dame and Clemson have struck a 12-year annual football scheduling deal, sources tell Yahoo Sports. The series works independently of the ACC structure, but does count as one of Notre Dame's 5 ACC games. Irish also are expected to play Florida State and Miami more regularly. Ross then continued, saying more clarity from the ACC. The Notre Dame-Clemson games do count towards Notre Dame's 5 annual ACC games during the years in which those games are already in the league scheduling rotations. Other years, they do not count. So there will be, if Clemson and Notre Dame were not scheduled to play in a given year, there's a rotation based on the league, then essentially Notre Dame plays 6 ACC games. So a couple of things about this. I've tried to find clarity. I'm guessing you're not going to get a lot of clarity, which also means I think this might be true. But again, this is informed speculation. On the years that they do not count as ACC games, I believe the schools are getting the money themselves. Also meaning that this deal could be transferable to additional in the event that either moves leagues, let's be real, if anyone's going to move league first, it will be Clemson. But
yeah, if Clemson goes to the SEC, for example, from my understanding, the agreement still is in place.
Correct.
So that is worth noting. I didn't know that this was coming. Some things are telegraphed. This was kind of out of the blue. I did anticipate Notre Dame to be playing more games against Clemson, Florida State, and Miami as kind of a, hey, we know that money is tied in with television ratings now, so we'll get you guys to play Notre Dame a little bit more to try to keep them happy.
See, I actually kind of looked at it a lot like you and I talk about how when people want to criticize leagues for stacking their conference tournaments, that if they're one-bid leagues, I looked at it more as these are the teams that we're kind of betting on that are going to be a part of the playoff conversation, and the more they play each other, the better it is for us.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because I think there's two sides of the coin when you look at the first year of the expanded playoff. The one side is a team like Indiana they lucked out with the schedule. They played nobody in the non-con. They didn't play Ohio State in the regular season. Or they did play Ohio State, but they played Michigan, and Michigan was a little bit down. They didn't have to play Oregon.
They did not have to play Penn State either,
and they went 11-1.
Yeah.
So that worked out very well for them. But I also think there's something to be said, and we're starting to see it more, is I feel like you're going to get rewarded for testing yourself. So if you believe in your program and you play these big non-conference games, you're not going to get crushed for losing them, but you're going to get a massive boost if you win them.
Well, actually, if you want to go real tinfoil hat, one of my other spidey senses on this one was, you know, we've had these ongoing productive discussions about the playoff, but we get no details. I was wondering if they believe strength of schedule is going to start to really impact it. And I think you would agree with me. If you're betting on, do I think the ACC's top to bottom is going to keep getting better in this environment? I'm betting no. And so if you're Clemson, hey, if I know I'm going to have seven bad games that aren't going to help me, because that's the other aspect of this. I tip my cap to Clemson. That means now Clemson, because they have the South Carolina game every year,
yep.
In addition to this, that means they're going to play 10 power, air quotes, power schools every single year. I actually was thinking, like, hey, it's their way of saying, like, we think strength of schedule is going to be a part of it. This is the easiest bet.
Yeah, and I mean, look, say what you will about Clemson. This year they play LSU. They start a home-and-home with LSU. And then this agreement with Notre Dame starts in 27. They were already scheduled to play a home-and-home against Notre Dame in 27 and 28 with the previous scheduling agreement. How about this, looking ahead? Clemson in 29 and 30 will now play Georgia, South Carolina, and Notre Dame. I mean, you say what you will about Clemson, man. They ain't messing around.
Wake Forest, BC in there.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe a road trip to Pitt.
Yeah, but they're recognizing, to your point, and, you know, you've seen Alabama has scheduled some home and homes. You know, we've got, Oklahoma and Michigan, I think, this year.
That's week two.
Yeah, so you're
starting. Jerome's not going to get suspended for that one. For those that don't know, Jerome Moore played at Oklahoma. He was not going to miss that game.
What is the deal with his suspension?
It's a structured settlement. It's two games. It's week three and week four.
Oh, funny how that works out.
Central Michigan and Nebraska. If you actually want proof that Nebraska's not back, the fact that Michigan's like, we'll punt the Nebraska game, that probably is not great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you think of this scheduling agreement. I mean, I think it's good for college football. I think, you know, once again, I thought it was dumb when people said that the expanded playoffs going to devalue the regular season. I disagreed vehemently. I still do. And now, with teams not hiding from non-conference games, like, look, I'll say this. To me, it kind of feels like the big boys are not scared. A team like, once again, not mean to throw them under the bus, but I guess I am in doing so, Indiana and others might say our chance to make it is to kind of run the table. Just kind of.
Yeah, no, it's the year that our big conference works out in our favor.
Right. But a team like Clemson, Notre Dame, Georgia's got four games in the pipeline now with Clemson down the line. Like, these programs are like, we're good. We lose a couple games, we'll be in. And that's the way it plays out. So,
I guess a decent amount of this also, my suspicion is, though nobody's saying publicly, I think the schools have an idea of what the playoff format's going to be and just kind of sniffing up in the wind. My gut says they're going to go to 16, not 14.
I just feel like if they go to 16, they got to get rid of conference championship games. And they're not going to. There's just so much money in conference championship games. But as we saw this year...
You know what else there's a lot of money in?
Home playoff games?
Playoff games, period.
I'd be all in favor of going to 16 and eliminating conference championships. Now, I also grew up... I mean, I understand that the SEC championship is a huge deal. And the SEC probably is going to be the one who... The reason I think 14 is where we're going to head, it's because the Big Ten and the SEC have all the power, and 9 out of 10 times, the Big Ten and the SEC are the two teams who are going to get the top two byes, right?
I think so.
Maybe 8 out of 10?
Here would be the counter. The real question is, are the leagues clinging to the championship games altruistically, or are they clinging to the championship games as a leverage piece? Because while, like, that was the other interesting story, I don't know if anyone happened to see this from Sports Business Journal. I thought this was interesting. So I guess we're getting into upfront season. For people that don't know what upfronts is, it's when all the big television networks invite all the advertisers and they announce, here's what's coming up this fall. Buy, buy, buy. Buy ads, buy ads, buy ads. This from Sports Business Journal from Molly Callahan. As upfronts loom, Disney and ESPN see college sports as a key area in advertising attention and investment, accounting for nearly 40% of total sports ad revenue. That's a 42% year-over-year growth and up 50% from 2023. According to Jim Minich, the SVP of Revenue and Yield Management at Disney Advertising, it really starts with college football. We're stoked about the season coming up, but we more than sprinkle in a significant portion of women and men's sports. Close to 80% of our advertisers buy college, and it really makes a difference in our portfolio. And so the reason why I bring that up is, are the leagues clinging to these championship games as a way to make it seem like you don't want to give this up, but maybe you are willing to give it up in some form of a negotiation, whether it be, all right, we'll give that up and we'll do 9-game schedules, or we'll give that up, but we're going to get a sweeter deal in playoff revenue, which we do with ESPN. I actually think kind of the bigger story in this is, I kind of wonder if the Big Ten's gamble, which was the Big Ten basically said, we want to make it like the NFL. We want all of our games to be on network, wink, wink, nod, nod, you know what that means. We want our big games to be on network, but we're also going to, if you got to put us on Peacock, so be it. But they had the game on CBS, the game on NBC, and then the game on Fox at varying different times throughout the day.
Well, it's a triple header, right? It's noon Eastern on Fox, 3:30 on CBS, and then the night game on NBC.
Correct. I'm unclear though. Some, like, at the end of the season, that's the way it goes. When Ohio State and Michigan said we're not playing games after 11 or whatever, 12 Eastern, it goes that way specifically. But I'm unclear if during some of the game, like, are there some weeks early in the season when the Big noon game is not a Big Ten game, because I think they still
every once in a while they'll throw like a Big 12 game in there.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be Big Ten, but more often than not, they just have better games.
But what was the actual biggest TV winner of the fall was the ESPN ABC decision, which is, all right, we're out of business with the Big Ten, but we're all in on the SEC, and essentially what they did was, park your butts here on your ABC affiliate starting at 11 a.m. and you're not changing the channel. And then with the Big Ten, even if you're a Big Ten person, and yes, everyone is capable of everyone's capable of using the guide or trying to figure out where the game is. But I think where they started to screw some up is there were some pretty big games that ended up being on streaming. And so then you're having to get out. You can't channel flip. But I think also what they miscalculated is oftentimes a lot of TV viewership numbers, particularly on the weekend, it's kind of passive. All right, we flip this on and maybe we're mowing the lawn. Maybe we're going out. We're grilling during throughout the day. Maybe we're going to run, pick up lunch while, you know, wife attends to the kids or vice versa. And it just kind of stays on. And that was a slam dunk home run for ESPN and ABC. Like, their numbers went through the roof. Whereas the Big Ten numbers weren't necessarily bad, but they did not have the success that the SEC did. And I guess really what we should be saying is this isn't really a SEC Big Ten. It was really more of just the success that Disney had.
I mean, look, getting into bed with the SEC is never a bad thing for business, especially football-wise. By the way, can I just are you aware of week one?
This year?
Yeah.
So we have the headliner. LSU's going to go lose a game in which I'll bet on them again, right? Is that Clemson? Is that what you said?
LSU's at Clemson. Okay. So no neutral. This is a,
okay,
a
so it's the battle of who really has Death Valley.
Mm-hmm. Arch Manning at Ohio State.
That's week one?
Week one.
All right.
Alabama at Florida State. Sunday, Notre Dame at Miami. And then the Jordan Hudson debut on Labor Day Monday, TCU at UNC.
Of course, the Georgia Tech Clemson Memorial Monday night game.
And if you want to, and I also think, I mean, it's in Atlanta, but also Sunday. We have two Sundays.